Wes Goldberg joins me to discuss the Miami Heat, including but not limited to Duncan Robinson's journey back from the dungeon. Where does Tyler Hero fit in, and Jimmy Butler living in the moment when it comes to answering reporters' questions? Also, we debate Thanksgiving sides in March for reasons. All that and much more is coming up right now on this episode of Divine Intervention. You worship the future like it's some kind of saint. But it's just like the past with a new coat of paint. John Gennaro, count me in!
One, two, three.
Today's first words belong to Quasi from the song All the Same, side one, track one on their fantastic 1999 record Field Studies, but the rest of them belong to me. Welcome to Divine Intervention, a self-help podcast about basketball. My name is Dan Devine, and before we get going, here are three things that I am grateful for today. Number one, I get paid by Yahoo Sports to talk about the NBA into this microphone and that camera and to write about it. Switched it up today, still a pretty good deal. Number two, I survived Career Day unscathed. I went to my daughter's school on Friday for Career Day to talk to first graders and fourth graders about talking about the NBA and writing about it. First grade class, no other parents when I got there, which meant I wound up interviewing six-year-olds for like a half hour on this very microphone. When I got to the fourth grade class, lots of people there, including firefighters who I had to follow by talking about this job. And I had to do it, unbeknownst to me, in front of a PowerPoint presentation that my nine-year-old made to show everybody. And the title of the slideshow was My Dad's Typing Job, which is true, but also a little hurtful and a little bit weird, but it was also very great. And I want to shout out all the teachers and kids at their school who welcomed me to talk about my talking and typing job. And number three, as important as all that, I get to spend part of my morning talking to somebody who also does a typing and talking job and does so brilliantly. My guest today is a wonderful writer and podcaster who has covered the NBA for the Bay Area News Group, Bleacher Report, Real GM, and The Ringer, among other publications. These days, he is the managing editor of All You Can Heat, which is part of the Fan-Sided Blog Network, and he is the host of the Locked On Heat podcast and one of the hosts of the Locked On NBA podcast, which you can listen to or watch wherever you are getting this. Friends, a warm welcome for Wes Goldberg. Wes, thank you so much for making some time for us. How are you doing today?
I'm good, and I'm glad that I can hear from somebody else who struggles to explain what it is that they do, especially around other people with real jobs. Like, you're just like, what do you do? It's like, I watch a lot of basketball, and I have a podcast, and we're like, and you get paid for that? And you're like, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so I had a doctor once, very brusque but efficient older Russian lady, who asked me, like, in by way of small talk on our first session, like, what I do, and I explained, like, I blog, and she just went very quiet. She's like, this is job? And I said, yeah, it is. I mean, I know it doesn't seem like one, but it is what is providing the health insurance for me to come see you today. Right. So there is a lot of that. And the firefighters were kind of like, okay. I mean, yeah, like the kids were putting on my helmet and I was talking mm-hmm. to them about burning buildings, but like what you do, you would use pretty cool. I was like, no, thank you very much, guys. thank you for your service. And if you ever want to come to the website, I'd really appreciate that.
Just in the cloaks. Just click.
Yeah, right. Exactly. If you can click and if you could subscribe and rate and review, that'd be huge for me, firefighters. Thank you so much. I've asked you here today, Wes, because I need some help getting out of a burning building of my own division. That's not the right word for that. A burning building of my own devising. There we go. I look at the NBA and I look at the Eastern Conference, and there's so many things that have changed and so many faces and new places and teams that are rising and falling. And I get all excited about the future. And I'm starting to have this feeling, this familiar feeling, and I'm sure you're familiar with it, that like our friends Quasi set up at the top, the Eastern Conference playoffs might wind up looking a lot like the past with a new coat of paint because the Miami Heat are coming. And I could think of nobody that I'd rather have talk me through what's going on in Miami than you. And we will get into that. But first, here on Divine Intervention, we always try to operate from a place of joy. So, Wes Goldberg, what is something from the world of basketball that has brought you joy this week?
So I wanted to go at first with LeBron just sort of figuring out the Oklahoma City Thunder in real time last night. Yeah. We talk so much about LeBron and all those things. So I'm going to go with instead Bobby Portis and Patrick Beverley at the end of that comeback for the Bucks. No Giannis in that game. They come back, beat the Clippers, and they just go like dueling hype men with each other on the court. I love it. I love it for them. just as people. I like when these players like kind of find kindred spirits like within the ecosystem in the jungle of the NBA. And like, I feel like Bobby Portis and Patrick Beverley should have played together before. And the fact that they are now together, maybe it's perfect. Maybe they weren't allowed to play. Like maybe you only get one Patrick Beverley and one Bobby Portis, and Adam Silver lifted a new rule that allows them to play under the new CBA. But I love that they're together. I love that they found each other, and I'm here for it.
It's almost too much amplitude. Like I'm a little, you worry about, it's like if you turn on a humidifier and a dehumidifier in the same place and it explodes, like is it too much energy in one contained unit? But that's why you bring in Doc Rivers. He's going to be able to understand those combustive elements and get them pointed in the right direction. And the Bucks, much to the chagrin of a lot of teams out there in the East and a lot of people who were pegging them as a complete disaster, you know, days after Doc Rivers got there, do seem to be pointing in the right direction, which, you know, more will be revealed about that. We'll see about that. But I love that. I love the idea of Patrick Beverley just literally bringing what he calls his belt to asses tour across the country at this point. Like it went to Philly and now it's going up to Milwaukee. Who knows where it goes next? He's kind of turning into Stone Cold Steve Austin, just drinking beers in post-game press conferences. Like all these things are good. Bobby Portis, you know, just can do no wrong in my eyes. I love this as a pick. I'm also going to veer slightly from my usual spiel here, and where we go right into the next segment. And I'm going to mention something that's bringing me joy this week. And you know, you mentioned the Thunder, not so much joy last night for them, but watching Jalen Williams play, man, that dude is so much fun to watch. He's been one of my favorite players to watch during the regular season here, just like impossibly smooth off the bounce. And he does a lot of the same kind of stuff that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander does, but like obviously not at the volume and the efficiency of it, but it keeps guys on their off balance. He can get all the way to the rim. He can stop on a dime and pull up. He guards everybody. Like his most frequent matchup, when you look at the matchup data on NBA.com, is Victor Wembanyama. and he's like a legit full foot shorter than him, but he's their power forward, so he has to guard those dudes. He's also built like a brick house, which helps him guard those dudes. He's averaging better than 19 points, 4 rebounds, and 4 assists per game this season, and he's shooting better than 50% from the floor. Here's a number that I like. The only guys, before the season, the only guys to do that by age 22, which is how old he is, friggin' Kareem, Michael Jordan, Giannis, David Thompson, and point guard Kevin Johnson. That is a weird list of guys.
It is.
But that is a cool list of guys. Oh, Kevin Johnson aside, it is a cool list of guys. And that's what Jalen Williams has been. That's the company he's keeping right now. It's shooting like 70% in the clutch. He leads OKC in fourth quarter scoring. Like if you get a guy who can be like the second or third best player on a title contender, which, you know, remains to be seen if they are, but they're trending in that direction. You get that guy with like the 12th pick in the draft. That is a like a moonshot home run. And I think there might be a possibility that he's even his ceiling is higher than that. You know, remains to be seen, but like it might even be a hell of a lot higher than that. And that is a source of joy for me.
I'm so glad you brought him up. I'm so happy to talk about Jalen Williams anytime anybody wants to, like firefighters or colleague podcasters. But my favorite, I love watching the Thunder because they're terrifying. And I mean that in a good way. Like if you're the other team and you're just like, what do you do with this? It's like everybody can handle shoot, blah, blah, blah. But my favorite part of every Thunder game might be those first few minutes of the fourth quarter where Shai Gilgeous-Alexander isn't in and Jalen Williams is just running the offense. It's a big reason why he is their lead scorer in the fourth quarter, the stat that you cited there. I love it because he's just like, okay, this is my turn. And I'm with you. I'm not putting a ceiling on this guy. When you see him operating the offense, I'm like, what? I don't know how good this guy can be. And we're so blinded by like Shai because he's an MVP candidate and Chet because of all that stuff with the rookie of the year, Chet versus Wemby. But like Jalen Williams is right here showing everybody is like, hey, I'm part of this conversation. I'm just as big of a reason as anybody else not named Shai that we are where we are at. We are at as the Oklahoma City Thunder. He's so much fun to watch. I'm glad you brought him up.
One more number before we move on from that. And again, it's like all context is everything. And he's playing in like Shangri-La, right? Where you've got like, like you said, everybody can shoot, dribble and pass. Everybody can make the next play. Defenses can't load up. Mark Daigneault has them running all those like guard screening actions, which inverts everything. It just makes people make decisions defensively that they're not familiar with or comfortable with. In those minutes, now some of it is just like, it's just those second and fourth quarter minutes. There's been a couple of games that Shai's missed, but he hasn't really missed very much. 34 points and 8 assists per 100 possessions for Jalen Williams in those minutes. Shooting, and the true shooting is up over 600, like 6, I think it's like 610. That's like, I don't want to speak into existence the last time the overqualified third option on Oklahoma City wound up getting his own team, but I watch him and I wonder, like, what would that look like? So anyway,
right.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. I'd like to see this version stick around for a while, but watching him play just like as an aesthetic experience, and then also the production, it's been lights out. It's been one of my favorite things. And maybe you'll be able to read about that a little bit at Yahoo Sports. Hint, hint, plug, plug. As we move forward, though, from one point of joy to another, the Miami Heat, man, 3 months into the season, it didn't look like there was a whole lot of joy in Mudville over there, right? Like, right around 500, negative point differential, bottom 10 offense, like the stuff that we saw for a lot of last year. And then you hit the second half of the season and Jimmy Butler says, oh, right, I didn't make the All-Star team. I missed a bunch of games. Now it's time for me to start dressing. And 10 out of the last 13, number two defense in the league during that span. Offense back over league average. Jimmy looking very much like Jimmy Butler. Bam Adebayo right around 20 points, 10 rebounds, 4 assists, making another defensive player of the year case. They're coming, man. And now they go from like whatever. I think they're still in seventh in the East, but only a game and a half out of fourth. They've got reinforcements to varying degrees of success. You bring in Terry Rozier, you get DeLon Wright on the buyout market. They have the second easiest schedule in the league remaining, according to Tankathon. They're trying to get not just out of the top six, but up into home court. Even that schedule coming up, they got Philly a couple of times. Philly continues to reel without Embiid. The Knicks have lost, I think, their entire top nine. So that'll be, that should be a fun game for the Heat. They get the Cavs a couple of times, and now Donovan Mitchell's dealing with a knee injury. Like, things could be lining up pretty interestingly here for the Heat. So you tell me, how good is this Heat team right now? Like, do we buy the first 3 months more, or do we buy these last 5 or 6 weeks more?
I'm going to go ahead and buy the last 5 or 6 weeks more. The Heat have been dealing with so many injuries. You look at the 31 different starting lineups this season, almost 200 games lost to injury, which is by far the most of any playoff team. I mean, that's down there with like Portland and Memphis with bottom three teams in terms of injury games missed. So it's been just a weird season for them. They don't have a single lineup that's played more than 79 minutes together, a single five-man lineup. It's wild. And yet here's Eric Spoelstra just patching things together in a way that nobody else can. And now that they've gotten a little bit healthier, I should say rather, they have Jimmy Butler playing like Jimmy Butler, fully healthy, Bam Adebayo healthy, and most of their guys healthy. Tyler Hero's been out for the last few games with a foot and a knee injury, but they're starting to show what it is that they want to be doing. And I don't think that, like, there was a misnomer, I think, that the Miami Heat don't care about the regular season, or that they've even, like, people have gone so far as to say that they've proven the regular season doesn't matter. And the Heat would be the first people to tell you that that's not true. I just think that they prioritize different things over winning in the regular season. And what they do is they want to experiment. They take the season through phases. The first, basically, three quarters of the season is experimenting, figuring out what this team is, what it does well, what it doesn't do well, what their best lineup combinations are, what their best actions are, what they want to get to, how they want to play. And then the last quarter of the season is ramping up for the playoffs and stacking those wins and hopefully getting out of the play-in tournament. And it didn't work last year because the team couldn't make a three-pointer the entire regular season, which, by the way, was not the plan. They weren't just like missing a bunch of threes like, ha-ha, just wait, we're saving all these for the playoffs. Like, that's how that works, right? We can just sandbag these things. No, but like this team is, like you said, it got a very favorable schedule that should break its way. I'm going to go ahead and predict that they make it out of the play-in tournament. And if they do, they're going to be fourth, fifth, sixth seed, whatever that's going to be. And I also don't think that they very, very much value the right home court advantage in the playoffs, because this is a team that is better on the road and has been basically under the Jimmy Butler era, has been better on the road than most teams in the league, regardless of what Miami's home record might be. And they realize, like, hey, home court advantage in basketball isn't like home and home field advantage in the NFL. Like, we still get home games. And if we go in on the road and we steal one of these first two games on the road, then boom, we've got home court advantage. It flips. And we could do that in the first two games, as opposed to trying to spend 82 games trying to work for that home court advantage that we could just blow in the first two games of a playoff series anyway. So I think they've figured out what works for them, whereas a team like, for example, the Thunder that we were just talking about, they're young. They need to prove it. They need to show themselves that they can win in the regular season before they can win at a high level in the playoffs. But the Miami Heat have been there. They've done that. There's so much institutional knowledge and just like everybody's just bought into what works because there is that proof of concept that they could say, okay, we don't necessarily have to stack so many wins in the regular season, but we do have to figure out what works for us in the playoffs. And balancing out like that part and what works like and getting enough wins to make it to the playoffs is sort of the tricky part. It almost backfired last year. I think it's starting to work this year because I do like this team this year. I actually kind of like it better, Dan, than the team last year. That doesn't mean that this team's going to make it to the finals, but I think this team's better than the one last year.
Yeah, you kind of anticipated what I was going to ask you there. Like, so after the whole, we don't have to get into the Damian Lillard of it all because I think we've all had enough therapy build about that one. But the around the time while that was happening, you know, the word out of the Heat and from Eric Spoelstra was on the record and people were saying like, we feel like this team is better than last year's team, whether or not we have a, you know, all NBA caliber point guard. What do you like better about this version of the Heat than last year's version?
I think that everybody just got a little bit better. I think Bam Adebayo is better than what he was last year. I think something clicked for Bam in the NBA Finals, actually going up against Nikola Jokic. And whatever that clicking is, it's just like, hey, whatever takes him to that higher level. Because Bam, remember, he didn't play in the 2020 Finals against the Lakers. He only played for a little bit before he got hurt. And so I think going through a full final series for the first time in his career was very instructive. And he kind of knew what he had to hone in and what screws he had to tighten over the offseason. And he just came back a better player, a more diverse player. And then you combine that with Duncan Robinson being a much better, more dynamic offensive player. Caleb Martin being a proven playoff performer. The addition of a guy like Jaime Jaquez Jr., who is an instant impact rookie. Nikola Jovic being able to make an impact in his second year. What I'm getting at is basically this team is deeper. And then you do the midseason swap of Terry Rozier for Kyle Lowry, who just makes more sense for this team and what this team needs in terms of just being another threat on offense. And I like I said, I just think all those guys getting a little bit better. And now, I don't know that I would. I think I would have said this a few months ago, but I'm definitely saying it now because Jimmy Butler is rounding into form and playing the best two-way basketball of his season. Like all these puzzle pieces start falling in into place. The pecking order falls into line. Jimmy Butler is your A1 superstar at the top, and then Bam Adebayo is able to do Bam Adebayo things, and everybody else is able to follow suit after that. Where I felt like the first 3 months of the season, everybody was kind of trying to do a whole lot because Jimmy Butler just wasn't playing like the all NBA player that he is. But now that he is, the outlines of what this team is becomes clearer. And I think it's fair to say, like, okay, with everybody kind of being going under the stress test of those first 3 months that forced them to become better players. And now that Jimmy Butler has sort of like retaken his seat at the top of the throne here in the depth chart, everybody's almost better off for it in a weird way. And that's why I think this team is better than last year.
Yeah, the stretching that you have to do to cover up like a little bit too much space, then when you suddenly have to just fill into your own role, everything gets a little bit easier, right? Everything gets a little bit, you know, more comfortable. On a very basic level, like I remember seeing some of that with like when OG Anunoby got to the Knicks and it was like, oh, right. If you're not asking like 6'4" guys to guard all these other guys, everybody else's job is a little bit easier. And so, yeah, there's that point. Like when you get the full strength Jimmy Butler, they don't make many of those. There aren't very many of those available. So when you have one and it returns to full form, you're like, oh, right, everybody else can chill out a little bit. Not that chill is like, I think, something that's in large supply in Miami. It seems like a fairly no chill environment in the organization. But I mean, you mentioned Duncan Robinson, and I wanted to like, I just from a, this is a show that is like a lot about feelings and vibes and also like where you, how you get to where you need to be, I think, is something that I think about a lot. That was a guy, it could have been over for him. Like, he was people did not expect him to become a high-quality NBA player. He beat the odds to do that. Then injuries, massive slump, winds up out of the starting lineup, winds up, like, out of the rotation. He's kind of in the dungeon. How has he gotten back over these last, like, year and a half, 2 years to where there's a real case you can make. So like he should be in that starting lineup and in those closing lineups for this team because of where he has sort of how he's developed his game.
To me, it's one of the great stories of the season that's not been talked about very much. You're right. Like the guy beat the odds to get to where he is and then got the big contract that he was never supposed to get and then went into basically a 2-year shooting slump after signing the contract. And the Miami Heat organization is cutthroat. You said very zero chill. Like it has gotten guys, gotten them to play well, and then spitting them out and chewing them out and sent them somewhere else into the NBA, right? Like, there's guys who have, like, kind of gotten there, but not fully. And I don't know that I ever expected Duncan Robinson to get chewed up and spit out by the Heat organization, but, like, there was a time where they were, like, at least reportedly trying to shop that contract after they signed him to, and he lost his job to Max Strus, who basically just came in and did a better version of what Duncan Robinson was doing for a year and a half. And so for him to just kind of take all that, get in the last, I think he shot like 33% from 3-point range last year, which is just crazy when you think about Duncan Robinson. And then he just kind of internalized all of it and said, okay, I'm not getting on the court. I've basically lost my job. What am I going to do about it? And I've actually talked to him a lot about this. And he just said, like, you know, I felt like I wasn't really getting opportunity, but I also felt like I wasn't earning that opportunity. And all he could do was kind of go into the gym and work. And it sounds so cliche, but there's dudes that do it and there's dudes that don't, you know, and he's one of those dudes that do it. And I thought in the playoffs last year, Tyler Hero goes down in the first game and suddenly Duncan Robinson is back into the rotation, right? Max Strus comes back, retakes the starting shooting guard spot, and then Duncan Robinson is just back in sort of the mix. And that playoff run where the shots just started going in for him and everybody on Miami, but they kind of caught lightning in a bottle, and that includes Duncan Robinson, that did so much to help his confidence. Like, he's literally told me this, and he had that, and then just the fact that while he was out, he was working on his ball handling, all these things, because I mentioned the shooting slump. He's like, look, if that shot's just not falling, I got to figure out other ways to make an impact. And that's why he started developing the layup game, the off the dribble game, trying to create a more dynamic to the two-man game with Bam Adebayo in terms of running pick and roll with him. And he started doing all that and working on all of that behind closed doors. And like in the playoffs, he was able to put that on display. And he was one of Miami's best players in their postseason run last year. And that basically just set the kind of runway for this season. And he just took off. And it's been an awesome year for him. And just so much credit for him for just staying locked in and not letting all that noise. And he's, you know, open about like the noise. You know, he's aware of it. It bothers him. He has to try to stay away from it, all that stuff. We all remember the stuff about the imposter syndrome during that bubble run. Like, he's been very open about his feelings and how he is, how he perceives himself as an NBA player. And I think that is actually helpful instead of kind of going the other way where you kind of have these other players that just have like this full, just like irrational confidence. And I don't care what the haters say. I'm just going to go for it. I think of a guy like Jordan Poole, for instance, who's very much like that. Where Duncan Robinson's like, no, these are my things. I'm a problem here and I'm a problem there. Let me fix these things. Let me be self-aware and do all the work that I need to do to be a better player and kind of get to where I need to be.
Well, that's a huge thing that I think people in general can see. Like, if you are not able to have success in the areas that you normally have success, like, all right, what else can you do? Where, you know, if you can't make things the way you used to make them, is there a new way you can make them? Is there another way you can, provide or whatever? And that's really hard to get to. If plan A has worked for you to the tune of whatever it was, like $80 million, and, you know, it's gotten you to that point, like, it's pretty hard to suddenly say, like, well, I guess I'll just have to, I'll figure out plan B and C now. Like, that's got to be a really hard thing to face down. And then he does that, and he's at like, I think he's around like 4 assists per 36 minutes this season. He's getting the line more often, like driving to the basket more often. As you mentioned, the layup package, like actually able to finish through traffic, gotten stronger, all these things. Like, as you mentioned, there are countless versions of this story that end with the guy not doing it. Your superpower wears off, you don't have another answer. And the Heat, as an organization, certainly seem like the kind of place where like, well, if there is another answer to find, we're gonna help you find it or give you at least the opportunity to find it. One place I'm curious about where the answer lies, you mentioned Tyler Hero, and he strikes me as a source of pretty significant anxiety among Heat fans. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
And the reason is, there's two versions. It's like inside you, there are two wolves. You look at this and there's, on one hand, like inarguably one of the, three most talented offensive players on the team, a ball handler on a team that needs ball handling, a shot maker on a team whose half-court offense can get bogged down. You think about all the drop coverage that they see against certain teams, and like, he is the guy who beats that with pull-up shooting and playmaking. And so he's like he neatly fits a need and has been productive when he's been able to stay on the court. And then there's that other, the other wolf, the other hand. I think he's only played in 36 of 60 games this season, which is like the fifth year in a row he's missed a significant chunk of time with injuries. The defense never feels as sturdy or sound with him on the floor. They often feel like the best version of themselves when they can play bigger guys or more locked in defensive guys, more versatile defensive players on those wing spots. And now he's out again and they're ticking up again. And you mentioned the depth and the guys that they've brought in and the guys that have developed. And now all of a sudden, is Nikola Jovic a starter for us? You know, like all these sorts of questions. Where does Tyler Hero fit into that conversation as we get over these next, you know, 20 odd games?
It's such a great, it's a great question. And it's a question, like you mentioned, like it's been asked in Miami a lot. And there's a pretty big split, I think, among the fan base about whether or not Tyler Hero should start, because they see the hooper, right? Like Tyler Hero's a hooper. He's a hooper. He is the hooper on the Miami Heat.
He's really one of those like Uber, you know, eye test numbers kind of style substance kind of guys, which is not to say that he doesn't have numbers or he doesn't have substance. It's just, but like the way he plays and also presents makes him somebody that is a very like a big dividing line on that kind of conversation.
And a fan favorite in Miami. Like there's few players at Kaseya Center who, when they check in, get as loud of cheers as Tyler Hero, because people just enjoy watching him play.
Sure.
And it's an entertainment product. And so, yeah, all those things. And then yet it's undeniable that you watch the starting five with Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero's place, and it just functions a little bit better. It's just a little bit smoother and it flows a little bit nicer. And I think the reason for it is that Tyler Hero is a young player who wants to be an all-star. We know that. He wants to be known as one of the best scoring guards in the NBA. And to get there, you need room to roam. You need to be able to go get into those mid-range shots, show off that dribble package that you've been working on for the last three summers, like all those things. And I do think that this year, when he's been healthy, he's been better at embracing, okay, let me be more of a catch-and-shoot guy when I'm playing next to Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. And when I kind of get some time on that second unit without Jimmy Butler, I can just run the show a little bit more often. And I think the Heat have found something. And then he goes down with the knee injury against the New Orleans Pelicans at the end of that game. And now he's dealing with a right foot sort of soreness that's been kind of lingering all season long. So we don't know when he's going to come back. But I don't know what they're going to do. I thought that they had an opportunity earlier in the year when he missed time, that when he came back and Duncan Robinson started showing off all the things that we were talking about the first time earlier in the season, that, okay, Duncan Robinson has deserved it. The difference between, because Duncan, when he was just like a 3-point shooter, you needed the on ball creation that Tyler Hero provided, and now that Duncan has provided some of that on ball creation, the gap between Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero in terms of on ball creation isn't as wide as it used to be. He can at least provide some of that for you. So can you go to Duncan Robinson now in that starting unit? I think their argument's never been stronger, and I thought that there was a chance for Spo to bring Tyler off the bench when he came back from the first injury. But as soon as Tyler was healthy, Spo went right back to Tyler Hero and in that starting lineup. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that that might be politically charged in terms of the contract, in terms of the fact that, hey, this is our best young asset. And branding wise, like trying to trade a player who's a starting shooting guard and 20 point per game scorer is easier than trading a sixth man who's sort of a 20 point per game scorer. Just like that doesn't have as much sizzle in terms of being a cornerstone in a trade package. And so I think there were some reasons for that. But also I think that the Heat really liked Tyler Hero, and they believe that the highest ceiling for this team was one that Tyler Hero figured it out with Jimmy and Bam. But that was still with like 50 games left. I don't know how many games are going to be left when Tyler Hero comes back this time. 18, 17, who knows? Like whatever it's going to be. And so that ramp up to the playoffs and hashing out that chemistry that he needs with Jimmy and Bam, I just don't know if there's going to be enough time for him to do it. And Duncan already has it. So I do wonder if Eric Spoelstra can bring back Tyler Hero when he does come back and say, hey, listen, just for the short term, for this run into the playoffs, and maybe even in the postseason, we're bringing you off the bench just because we have something that's clicking here and we're trying to accomplish something. But this doesn't mean anything for your future. You know what I mean? I don't know if it's Eric Spoelstra not being able to sell it to Tyler Hero. I don't know how much say Tyler Hero actually has in it. I don't know if they're worried about Tyler Hero getting disgruntled or all those things, or if Eric Spoelstra just truly believed in the past that the team was better with Tyler Hero as a starting lineup. Big picture. But I think that there's an argument to be made now that in terms of accomplishing your short-term goal, which is winning a championship this season, Duncan Robinson might be the best option right now. And then you bring Tyler Hero off the bench as the sixth man who, by the way, he already won the award for being the best at a couple years ago. And he can run that second unit and kind of more bring more balance to an offense that needs it. I don't know. That's sort of where I'm at, but it is fascinating. And at the end of the day, I'll believe Eric Spoelstra will bring Tyler Herro off the bench when I see it.
I'm curious about that though. It's like, I know you spoke to Herro before the season for a story that, you know, feature that ran in the Ringer, and there was a conversation about like him finding out about some of the, you know, the machinations in the Damian Lillard trade talks, like when he's at dinner with Spo, and like he, you know, you talked earlier about Duncan Robinson saying he heard the noise. Tyler Herro, I have to imagine, is also very familiar with the noise at this point. You're trying to develop into something and you have all this other sort of conversation about that. Like what has Herro said about the place he finds himself in that hierarchy and trying to kind of figure out where he goes from here?
Yeah, he's open about wanting to be like the guy. But he also recognizes that it's Jimmy's team and it's Bam's team. But he kind of sees it as a triumvirate where it's like, you know, he said a lot of times, especially when he was struggling earlier in the year, you know, we go as me, Jimmy, and Bam go. We bring the energy. We're the leaders here on the team. And I do think that the team, by the way, feels that. I think there might be like a misconception about like, oh, Tyler Herro might be like the kind of quote unquote knucklehead on the team, and everybody's just sort of rolling their eyes at. And I don't think that that's true at all. I think there's a lot of respect for what Tyler Herro does from his teammates and the coaching staff and the organization. They are very high on Tyler Herro. Just because they tried to trade him for Damian Lillard and Kevin Durant does not mean that they're not high on him, right?
Sure.
Right. And so I do think that there's all of that, and they do view him as somebody who's capable of making that leap and getting there. And Tyler Herro has been really open about the fact that he hears the noise. And my favorite thing about Herro when he's been healthy and he's been playing well is the like just the DGAF attitude that he has for all of it. When he spoke with me about that story for the Ringer that you mentioned, like he was so honest and just like, yep, they were trying to trade me for Damian Lillard. You know, it was fine. I get it. Like, I guess, you know, I kind of it was like, hey, like, is it almost a compliment that they tried to trade you for a top 75 player of all time? And he goes, he just like kind of laughs at me and he goes, I guess some people could see it that way. And then like the end of that sentence that he didn't say was like, but I don't, you know, yeah, like right. It's just, you know, and so he has a ton of confidence about himself, which you love. But he's I think that sort of DGAF attitude has helped him this year kind of get over the noise. He's like, hey, the noise is already out there. It just is what it is. I know what this is. I know that the next time a top 75 player becomes available, like a future Hall of Famer, the Heat might try to trade me for him too. That's life. That's what it is. And in the meantime, all I'm going to do is hoop. And I kind of think that was almost freeing for him in a way.
Well, in the meantime, if he and when he's able to get back, let's say, you know, we're just like hypothetical here. Let's say Spo winds up seeing it the way you see it and says, our best self is Duncan Robinson in the starting lineup alongside Jimmy and Bam. Do you see Jovic sticking around there?
That's a great question, man. I don't know. They have been reluctant to start Tyler Herro and Nikola Jovic together, but less reluctant to start Duncan Robinson and Nikola Jovic together.
We just got more size there and, you know, a little bit more stability, I would imagine.
A little bit more stability. I think the like just him having 5 inches, Jovic, 5 inches on the other power forward options, whether it's Haywood Highsmith or Caleb Martin, definitely helps. I think this is part of the experiment. I don't know that even the Heat would tell you that they know if Jovic is the permanent starter. I think they're still trying to figure it out.
All right. Well, insert four here. I also wouldn't be surprised at all if when it matters most, that's Caleb Martin, even if he's given up size, it's because they've seen it and they feel comfortable with it on the two-way play. You get Tyler Herro off the bench. You've got more or less health. You know, Kevin Love's back, who's been sensational for them this season. Like you have the full complement of dudes. Is it more likely, or is it wishful thinking at this point to say, like, well, we saw them come from underdog roles last season and win in Milwaukee and win in New York and win in Boston and get there, even win in Denver. Mm-hmm. Like, we've seen them do it. Is it like wishful thinking to say, well, it's going to happen again? Or is it at this point, given what we've seen from the Miami Heat over the last handful of postseasons, is it sort of foolish to doubt it? Like, that's where
that's
I am.
Great
like,
question.
This, it doesn't look like the boogeyman I imagined, but it still looks a hell of a lot like the boogeyman.
Right. It's a great question. I don't think that we can just say, hey, they won it last year or they did it last year so they could do it again this year. Like it's if that's the first kind of bullet point in your argument, you have a pretty weak argument as to why the Miami Heat can go back to the finals this year. But I think it's a bullet point, but it just can't be the top or the second bullet point. Right. Like to me, I would look at, OK, they have the best coach in the Eastern Conference. That matters. They have a guy like Jimmy Butler who's playing at an all-NBA level that nobody wants to see. That matters. between him and Bam Adebayo? Do they have maybe the best defensive tandem in the Eastern Conference? How much does that matter to you? They're, you know, 11th right now in 3-point shooting percentage. Can they get higher? Like, there's things that you may be able to point to. Are they the deepest team in the Eastern Conference, even if they're not the most top heavy team in the Eastern Conference? Like, how much does that matter in the postseason? Like, we can have those kinds of arguments. The fact that they are so good on the road, I think they're one of the best road teams in the league. Those kind of arguments, the fact that their net rating over the since February is at plus 7.8. That seems more in line with
contender-tier stuff. Yeah,
exactly. Like, that's an argument, right? Not just, hey, don't count the Heat out. Like, I hate when I hear like the talking head shows and they're like, just can't count the Heat out. And it's like, okay, well, what's the basketball reason?
Right. Can
like,
we count on them and why?
Right. Exactly. So all of that is part of it. I do think that there is something to be said about like the institutional knowledge that this team has and belief in itself that they've gotten there and they've done it before. Like, that stuff matters. Belief matters. But, it's not the only thing that matters, right? And I do think that the East is just different than it was last year. Like, Boston is a world beater right now. They're much better than they were last year. Milwaukee is a different kind of shade of what they were before. Who knows what the Sixers look like when Joel Embiid comes back, but that team looked every bit the contender when he was healthy. The Knicks are better when they're healthy. So it's the whole ecosystem in which that they're trying to do this is completely different than what it was last year. So you just can't rely on last year.
You can't rely on last year, but I do think you can rely on in an atmosphere and an ecosystem where everything is sort of different, moving all the time. Mm-hmm. Who do I believe? Who do I trust to, you know, pull the right lever at the right time in the right matchup and say, yeah, I spent 60 games figuring out, can I play Haywood Highsmith in this situation? Where does Jaime Jaquez work best in what lineup situations? You know, do we go smaller here? Do we go bigger there? Do we need to like throw Orlando Robinson on the court for a few possessions here or there against an opposing big man, whatever? Like, and then who do I trust to execute that? As much as I don't want to just lean on don't count out the Heat, like, I believe the answer is Eric Spoelstra in a lot of those situations, right? Like, I've seen him out coach most of the other options on the board here. And so if nothing else, it wouldn't surprise me for that to be the case. Especially as you mentioned, having developed this kind of depth, having developed these sorts of answers. And if Jimmy Butler looks like this friggin' Jimmy Butler again, what do you make of him saying to Brady Hawk, there's no such thing as playoff Jimmy, and then saying, I mean, it's the time of year I turn it on. Jimmy, come on. Give me one or the other. It can't be both at the same time all the time.
For Jimmy, it can. It just depends on what he wants. It literally just depends on what he feels like doing. Like that quote, that the first one you mentioned was last year, right? And so that was last year's Jimmy Butler branding. This
can't rely on last year.
Yeah, this is new. That was dreadlock Jimmy Butler. That was a whole different package that we got to see in the public. This is emo Jimmy Butler. This is somebody who's in his feelings. This is somebody who's very aware of you know, all these things. And so he's like, yeah, no, playoff Jimmy is a real thing, at least when Chris Haynes asks. If I ask him tomorrow, he might say, Jimmy Butler, playoff Jimmy is just a fake thing. It's just a media narrative. And I was like, you told Chris Haynes that, you know, it's just however Jimmy feels.
So Jimmy's in his feelings, and a whole lot of other people could be in their feelings if they have to see the Heat come mid-April. Before we go any further, we're going to take a quick break, pay some bills, and we will come back in a minute for more Divine Intervention. Welcome back to Divine Intervention, and we are actually going to get to a segment that it's a cursed segment, Wes. You don't know this, but I have had this on the rundown for at least a month, and we have not gotten to it. But today, we're making good time. You are, I mean, all these other guests that I've had, rambling nonsense. You're here, you're task-oriented, militaristic Miami Heat culture. That's right. And so we're able to get to what's next. And this is something that I like to call the self-scout. Because, Wes, you can't get better without being radically honest about where you are and who you are. The self-scout is an opportunity for us to identify one strength in our game worth highlighting and one, I won't say weakness. Weakness is strong, but we try to be positive about self-talk here. So let's go with an opportunity for potential improvement. I will start, and I'll give a strength, and I'll give a weakness. If you want to jump in, you feel free, but I want to make sure there's a safe space for you to engage as you feel comfortable.
Okay.
A strength in my game is that I'm getting more comfortable in the kitchen. I'm not flashy with it. Not going to be out here on Chopped or one of these like amateur cooking shows. I don't have an especially deep bag of recipes. I'm not going in there into a hefty dribble package. I'm not have a natural playmaking touch when it comes time to create out a structure with spices and all sorts of other things, but I can execute the game plan specifically on what my kids want for breakfast and then the several dinners that they will allow myself to cook. And the family dinner repertoire is starting to grow. So spaghetti and meatballs, general stuff. Baked chicken and rice, sure. Baked ziti, I kind of crush baked ziti. Let's be honest about this. A little bit of pork tenderloin, some like breakfast for dinner stuff, omelets, chicken, waffles, do some different things there. I'm adding to the game. That's the idea. I'm adding to the bag and I'm trying to get some stuff on the plate that they'll eat so we can have more family dinners together where we actually sit and spend some time together. It's been a point of emphasis, like officiating, and it's something that we're working on trying to get better at. And I can say I'm getting stronger there, Wes. And that's something that I feel good about me.
I love that. And you know what? Everybody's got to know what their strengths are in the kitchen too. Like, I'm the opposite of you. Like, my weakness is like, hey, give me directions. And I'm like, nope. As soon as I get to like point two in the direction, like preheat oven. Okay, got it. Fold cheese into whatever. I'm like, nope, don't know what that is. Get out. don't know what that is. And then I just throw it away. But I really like to experiment in the kitchen. I'll just like throw spices. And for the most part, it comes out okay. I don't deviate too much. It's like chicken, you know, it's salmon, it's stuff like that.
Right.
I don't get crazy, but I feel like I can just whip something up in the kitchen. I feel good about that. I think myself, Scout, I'm really good at just...
Before we get further, you realize that was a very Eric Spoelstra kind of answer to cooking, right? You're like, I don't have a whole lot of... I know where I want to get to. I know generally where we want to arrive at.
Right.
And we'll find our way there as we go. So that's it works in context. So I'm sorry. Right. Go ahead. You're self-scout.
I think the Duncan Robinson. What's the Duncan Robinson of spices? Is it like a... It's like it is like a... It's a little versatile. It's not as versatile as like salt, but it's like a cumin might be. Like you could add it into more things than you think maybe.
Can I tell you? So it's one of the few things where I've actually sort of been inventive in a way that like it wasn't on the page and I kind of just had to figure it out. So there was a pork recipe that I was making. I had to make like a cream sauce. It was like a French-based kind of thing. So it was a wine cream sauce. But I'm like, that's just like too wine forward what I've got here. I maybe put a little too much in. What do I do? How do I cut this? Cinnamon. Cinnamon in the wine cream sauce. And it sort of it cut it right in half, made it a little bit sweeter notes. And there's
a little bit of like a Thanksgiving vibe almost.
It was a little bit like that. And we'll get back to that. But it's the idea of... I looked in the spice rack and I'm like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing here. All right. I got to like de-brown dunk it, like just take it and kind of like close my eyes and hope for the best. And it worked. And I felt like I was about 15 feet tall and bulletproof from that point on. So I don't know if Duncan Robinson is the, you know what? Let's be kind. Today, Duncan Robinson, you are the cinnamon. That's the spice
I love
for
it.
You. I like
it's
that.
It's a superfood. It's a superfood, man. I love
That's
it.
That's right.
Outside of the kitchen, I'm really good at just crushing to-do lists. I'm really good at making to-do lists and then crushing those to-do lists. A to-do list is my, like, everybody needs to know what motivates them. A to-do list that I made motivates me. Like, if I have it on there, I will do everything in my power that day to make sure that thing on the to-do list is done.
Incredible. It's an old Bright Eyes lyric. It was like, it's too hard to focus through all this doubt. Keep making these to-do lists, but nothing gets crossed out. I'm a little bit like that. Like, I will have them as sort of running drafts, but, you know, this is not a firm entity that I need to crush out before the end of the day. That's incredible, though. That is, again, we talk about staying task-oriented, being motivated. Wes, that is something you should feel good about. You should feel proud about that.
Yeah, I mean, granted, like these to-do lists are usually like three things long, and one of them is usually just like eat breakfast. But like, I'm crushing them.
That's all right.
Attainable goals.
That's exactly right. It's about motivating yourself to get to the next step. I love that.
Yep.
But if we're gonna scout, we also have to be honest about, you know, the areas for improvement. I am terrible at long range planning. Like you're talking about to-do lists, and that's a today thing. I can do today, right? It might not be on crossing out a list, but I got to get this thing filed. I've got to have this recording session. I got to be prepped for this. I got to pick the girls up at this time from after school, whatever. Insert thing here. I can do that. My wife and I are trying to figure out like summer vacation stuff, like after the girls are out of school. And it's like, so in mid-July, what are we doing? And I'm like, I find myself, it's like the Zach Galifianakis gif where the math is going past his head from The Hangover. And I'm just like, I'm like frozen in place. I lock up completely where I'm like, because I only, because of this stuff, I only think about like trade deadline, first round of the playoffs, you know, like first round of the playoffs. Am I traveling for the finals? Beginning of free agency. Like everything is like in 2 week or 3 week chunks.
Right.
And then when you get like in 6 months, what are we doing? I absolutely buckle. So it's an area I got to work on, especially because every time we have one of those conversations, my wife, I can see the hope in her eyes where she's like, maybe he'll be ready for this conversation this time. And I have been disappointing her on that score for years.
I relate to you so hard on this. My wife will come up. She actually asked me so I'm with you on the NBA calendar. I see nothing beyond it. Yeah. My wife she tried to frame it as an NBA calendar thing. She's like, so Summer League in Vegas in July, what if we also built a trip into LA around that? And I go, what is July? I don't understand July. Am I even going to be a person in July? Who am I? Like, that seems like a different person to me in July. Like, that's somebody else's problem. You deal with me in July. I can't deal with me in July right now because it's March. And I'm totally with you. Like, my children try to make plans like, oh, yeah, we should go to Europe in August. I was like, are you kidding me? Europe in August? Like, the Heat play the Pistons tonight. I can't look beyond that. Like, what am I supposed to do with this information?
This is not a failing of our partners. This is a failing of our brains. And the 100%. Way that we have been, like, it's, you know, like factory farming and raised in a very small box. Like, we cannot think outside of it.
Every other normal person can, in March, think about October. It's the same year, except for basketball writers. We have a mental block beyond, like, the mid-June point. We're just like, we can't get past it. I love that. That's a great weakness. That is my number one weakness, and I'm glad we share it. My other one is that I have a severe deficit. I am so woefully ignorant when it comes to classic movies.
Like, oh, okay.
My portfolio of classic movies that I have viewed and watched and can appreciate is embarrassingly limited. Name a classic movie.
The Conversation.
Haven't seen it. Name another one.
Okay. Let's see. Devil in a Blue Dress.
Haven't seen it. Name another one.
Forrest Gump.
I've seen that. Okay.
Okay. Also, I'm gonna that was super producer John Gennaro. Drop that in the chat. I don't know that I would consider it like a firm classic. That's fine.
Probably only because they showed it to me in like school once. Like
Cool Hand Luke.
Haven't seen it.
Should probably do that. That dude eats 50 eggs at one time. It's also young Paul Newman. Like, it's young Paul Newman. So you're watching that and you're like, oh, that's why people like Paul Newman. Like, this guy was like an absolute charisma fountain.
Okay.
Like,
how about this? Take all of Paul Newman's everything. Haven't seen any of it.
You know what you should do? Well, first off, you should watch more movies. But also, like, The Color of Money is great Paul Newman. It's also young Cruise. And it's pool. It's billiards. It's phenomenal. Right. Forrest Whitaker shows up in there. There's a lot going on. The Godfather, any of the Godfather movies.
I've seen all the Godfathers. Yes.
Okay, well,
I've got the Italian ones down. I've got the Godfather. Like, my dad's from New York. So it's just like, we got Goodfellas. Like, but that's my problem is I just watch those over and over and just not the other things. You can even name a Tom Cruise movie and I'll embarrass myself. Like, I've seen like Top Gun.
Mm-hmm. You're mostly covered then. Like, that's probably, I'm partial to Magnolia. I like Paul Thomas Anderson, but like, I understand. Listen, you've seen Top Gun. You're more or less
pretty
fine.
Much got the Top Cruise.
But so
experience.
What I like to do, what I want to do here before we're going to move on, but you frame this as a weakness. And I understand that this is an opportunity for growth though. This is not a weakness it's an incontrovertible or, something that I can't get past.
Right.
What this means is, on your, you know, whatever your time away is, your off nights, your whatever, anything is additive. Like, there was a point this past weekend, or it was this weekend or 2 weekends ago, we were sitting around on a Saturday night, and I was like, you want to watch Predator? And I came up on this show once before because some rapscallion named Rohan Nadkarni had some takes about the Predator's hunting, skills. And I was like, I haven't watched Predator in a really long time. And my wife was like, I don't think I've ever seen it. And you know what? That's just like an hour and 45 minutes. And you watched Predator, man. And you had a good time. And you've also now you've checked that off your to-do list in your brain. Ooh. So any of these things. Now, some of them are like, it's you got to like, you know, get the wherewithal for the 3 hour classics. Right. Don't think about it like that. It's got to be like, and then even the parenting for me is also like, you might only have an hour. So you know what? Some movies take two nights and that's like, it's not an ideal delivery mechanism, but it's, you know, if you can watch a show over the course of a month, why not watch a movie over the course of a weekend? You know, these are not ideal circumstances, but listen, sometimes when the bullets are flying, you just got to figure out a way to get something done.
I agree with you. I like the idea of framing it as a to-do list. And so that's my strength. So it's like, yes, maybe we do it that way. But yeah, I just feel like I would be able to hang in way more conversations, because in public, I find myself just like lying about movies. People are like, oh, haven't you seen this that time? And I was like, oh, yeah, that scene in that movie I never saw. And I just like lie my way through it. I don't want to lie anymore. I want to tell the truth. Yeah.
I love, well, that is a phenomenal one. We like not lying just for the sake of like social lubricant. Like, right. I think is really, because honestly, it makes you more interesting. If you're like, as you know what? I don't know that, because then you can have a conversation about why that is, or you can have like, right, well, you tell me why you dig it. Maybe I will add it onto the to-do list that I'm actively.
Oh, see, I'm not going to do that. That's a healthy thing to do. I would rather just see the movie and stop lying. And until I see the movie, I'll just keep lying. But your version is a way more healthy version to go about it.
I mean, listen, we all lie about certain things. This is one that you can lie about. That's fine by me. Wes, that was a triumphant debut voyage for the Self Scout. Thank you so much for being with me on that. I really appreciate it.
I love it.
And before we get too far afield here in the show, we're going to go to something that we like to call the closing five. Because as I'm sure you know, Wes Goldberg, how you start is not nearly important as how you finish. Five questions for our guest. Question the first. Much has been made, including on this podcast, about Jimmy Butler going emo. The media day hair, the new Fall Out Boy video, etc. Wes Goldberg, have you ever had an emo phase?
Oh my God, yeah, dude. I was born 1991. Yeah, my whole life was an emo phase. Yeah, dude. Yeah, there's still parts of me that's an emo phase. I would say from like seventh grade to probably junior year of high school was just full emo phase. I had, Dan, hair down to the back. My hair was down to the middle of my back.
Yes.
That's how long it was. And I used to just wear like a maroon hoodie and listen to just like pop punk, Green Day, Blink-182, My Chemical Romance. Like that was my ish, man. Like in that age, like I felt that. I felt that stuff. Like, yeah, definitely an emo phase.
See, now you just said you were born in 1991, which makes me feel like I'm going to shrivel into a corn cob and die underneath my desk right now because I am I'm 9 years older than you. So my emo phase started earlier and included different bands, but we'll get a pack in an extra recommendation. Go listen to some old Promise Ring. The Promise Ring, an early adopter of this, Nothing Feels Good. Dan Devine life motto, divine intervention, colon, nothing feels good. Thanks to the Promise Ring. I am glad to hear, though, that you were able to speak Jimmy's language on some of these things. It's very good. Question number two, and this sort of dovetails with something we've been talking about. You watch a lot of basketball. You talk about it a lot. You read about it a lot. You listen to things about it a lot. But ball is not life, contrary to popular belief. So, Wes, what do you do when you need to get away from it? We know it's not watching movies. What does self-care look like for you?
I love to go to the gym. I love to go on like long walks. I live in Miami, so just like getting out into the sunshine, I love that.
Just into humidity, just constant clinging sweat.
I love the humidity.
That's insane. That's a preposterous thing to say.
I was born here. I grew up here. When I lived in the Bay Area, it was so dry, and I was like, "How do you guys just wear one T-shirt all day? Like, I need to be at least sweating through three of these bad boys, like, just to feel alive." You know, like,
I've never been more disgusted on my podcast. This is a preposterous thing to be true.
I love all that, and then I love like the best thing I could do is just like sit by the water with a cigar, and I'm so happy with like no phone, nothing.
This is Miami as fuck. All right,
I know. Yeah, that's the life, dude. That's the life.
That's incredible. All right, I guess I can't in good conscience recommend the cigar smoking, but everything else sounds pretty good. Yeah. I don't love the humidity thing, but you know what? I don't have to love what you love. That's an all right situation. John Gennaro in the chat telling me he loves humidity too. What is? All right,
you sweat.
Yeah, I know.
But it's like a sauna, but forever.
Hey, you know what's not good? It's feeling sweaty. No, thank you. Bad news. Cold weather. That shower
after that long humidity sweat, or even like if you're lucky enough to be by a pool and you just jump in. Oof.
All right. Well, going into the pool, I can understand that. All right. I'll agree to disagree, but I also understand your perspective when it comes to the pool. Question number three. After he retires, should LeBron James get a statue outside of Kaseya Center?
What a great question. So Dwayne Wade's going to get a statue. That's already been announced. I'm pretty sure Udonis Haslam will get a statue. We'll see.
What will Udonis Haslam's statue be doing?
like,
will he be fighting Dwight somebody Howard, up by the
maybe?
Throat?
I don't, yeah, just, I'm not sure. It's a great question. He should get like a mural on the side of like Kaseya Center of just like that one with the bloody eyebrow coming down his cheek.
Oh my God, what a great visual.
They should do that one. I don't know that LeBron's going to get a statue. I don't know. It would also not surprise me if it was just Dwayne Wade for sure. A very long time.
Yeah, I mean, it stands to reason. You know, like nobody has been a more central character in the evolution or the growth of the franchise, the elevation of it to that sort of championship status. LeBron, obviously, a hugely important figure in the most successful period of the franchise. Mm-hmm. But I get it. If you want to make something like it's only one guy, that makes sense to me. But the at this point, like. How LeBron will be celebrated and by how many franchises is a very, it's kind of weird to get your mind around like how many different things he might have in different places.
Right. How many statues, if he has like a statue in Cleveland, Miami, and LA, like if you're an alien and you're visiting Earth and you're just like doing a basketball arena tour and you're like, wait, how many people love LeBron? Like this is, why does he have so many statues? This is crazy. And then we also like, once you have the first statue, does the threshold to get a statue become lower at that point because somebody's already broken that barrier where I think like LeBron's jersey is going to get retired. And that seems like a foregone conclusion. But also he only played in Miami for 4 years. Like there's not a lot of players in NBA history who played somewhere for 4 years and had their jersey retired. But he's going to have his jersey retired. And I think because of that, I think that's good enough for there's not also to have LeBron's jerseys hanging in the rafters, arguably the greatest player of all time, whatever. Whoever is your GOAT is your GOAT. But like to have that guy in your rafters is enough of an honor. I think that's good enough for both LeBron and for the Miami Heat, I think.
I just love the idea of your basketball loving aliens going on a road trip and being like, well, he's got all these things all over the place. Everybody must love him, right? And you're like, let me tell you about Kobe fans.
Check Twitter.
Not here, right? Are you familiar with you? The thing that brought on the extinction level event that led to this, the aliens coming and excavating our planet. Yeah, right. I'm sure they're familiar with it. Question number four: you have publicly called Whitesville brand T-shirts the perfect T-shirt. This is not an advertisement. I'm just curious about shirts. What makes it better than other T-shirts?
That is so funny that you brought that up. I'm literally wearing one of them right now, and this is a Whitesville tee. I think you could see, right there, boom. And
we'll zoom in on that. People on YouTube can zoom in on that.
Zoom. Technology, baby. What makes a great T-shirt? First of all, it's the cotton. Presumably, you're wearing cotton and not like the dry fit, whatever Under Armour thing that is. Like, if you're going like walking outdoors and going to be in public, it should just be a cotton T-shirt. Don't get crazy. 100% cotton. And what kind of cotton is it? Is it like a Supima cotton? Is it a loop wheel cotton? Like what kind of, you kind of getting all this, what kind of fibers do you want? Do you want a little bit more of a heavy, like shirt, or do you want something a little bit lighter depending on the climate that you're in? Everybody's perfect T-shirt is perfect for them. You also have to worry about fit. Like what's the body length? I think that gets lost in the conversation a lot. We know what a shirt should feel like up here, but do we know how long it should go and how much of our belt should it show or how far should it get to our pockets? Like all these things are very important in terms of making a T-shirt not only like feel good, but look put together too. So that's what I want out of a T-shirt. Can I wear it to a nice, not like, you know, a fancy restaurant, but can I wear it to dinner and not look like a schlup? Can I wear it to dinner and look like a put together gentleman, even if it's just a T-shirt and jeans? That to me is a good T-shirt.
Why the hell did I spend all this time asking you about basketball? I could just ask you about T-shirts and that would be a full length enjoyable conversation that I would learn a lot about. Because guess what? I always look like a schlub, no matter where I am and what I'm wearing. So the idea of like actually having, like you started naming types of cotton and I was like, you left me five exits ago. I don't know where the hell we are right now.
Cotton.
This is incredible information that I'm getting. Speaking of incredible information, question number five, it is March, which means everybody's going to be filling out brackets. And I need to talk to you about a bracket you once filled out. It was on your Substack. In 2021, the Thanksgiving Sidesgiving Bracket Challenge from the Today Show, stuffing was your winner as the best Thanksgiving Day side over rolls, which is a very bread-heavy final. I respect that. I understand that from a carbs perspective. A, I'm wondering if you're thinking of a particular stuffing, like one family member's that is, you know, really high in your memory. And then question number two of this, like the sub question, with the benefit of some hindsight and maturity, several years of emotional growth, are you prepared to admit that green bean casserole over macaroni and cheese is the stupidest thing you've ever said in your miserable life?
So I'll start with the stuffing part. I'm thinking about my mom's stuffing. And she makes a great stuffing. I'm surprised I had stuffing versus rolls in the final. It must just be a weird way that bracket fell. But
you can never project upsets on some of the, you know, the 8-9 lines. Who knows? Right. You know, every once in a while there's a random 4-13. Tough to say.
What did I have? I had green bean casserole over mac and cheese.
You did.
Good for me. You know what? Sometimes, you know, you got to sell content, Dan. You gotta have something clickbaity there. Like, did I label the bracket like conclusive Thanksgiving Day bracket? Why green bean casserole is better than mac and cheese? Like, sometimes you just got to sell the content.
Should call it a Trollsgiving bracket. This is, you heathen. It's brutal.
What's your favorite Thanksgiving side?
No, it's stuffing. Stuffing's delicious.
It's delicious.
I can't argue with that even a little bit. My dad used to make it with like ground sausage in it. And I was like, no, yeah. This is like, you know, this is stupid. Why am I eating everything else? Just give me a large plate of this and then I'll fall asleep.
It's got everything. It's got bread. It's got protein. I think there's a vegetable in it somewhere. Like
might
mushrooms.
Be some celery in there
some
somewhere.
Celery. That's good for you, right? Like it's got all the, like, why can't I? You would look like an insane person if you had like a bowl of stuffing in front of you in March. Like people would be like, are you okay? Do you know what day it is?
I'd look like the happiest insane person you ever saw in your life. I just had a bowl of stuffing right now. What is it? It's 11:03 a.m. on a Tuesday. Just give me a big bowl of stuffing, man.
What'd you have for breakfast today? Stuffing. Just say that. Next time somebody asks you, what'd you have for breakfast today? Just be like, I had some stuffing.
And just see how they respond to you. And as they just sort of slowly recede back away from you.
Like, did you find it in the back of your fridge from Thanksgiving? Did you make fresh? Do they even have the ingredients at the store at this time of year?
Did a time traveler give it to you? Where did it come from? You know, the sad thing is, so two things are true. One is an embarrassingly large proportion of my meals now consist of things that my kids did not finish. And then also on a morning like today where we've got the recording, but I also had something I had to file. I was up at like 4 o'clock in the morning. So breakfast was like the crust of a grilled cheese and half of a peanut butter and jelly. And you're like, I don't know. I mean, 4 o'clock in the morning with coffee, I was like, this, sure. What the hell? I'm living wrong and I'm living weird. And I don't know exactly how to explain it, but I do know that macaroni and cheese beats green bean casserole every single day of the week. I can't in good conscience recommend Wes Goldberg's takes on green bean casserole versus macaroni and cheese. But before we get out of here, we do give a weekly recommendation each week. Does not have to be about basketball. Can be about absolutely anything. Past examples have included listening to Andre 3000's flute record while doing stuff, going for a walk outside, eating Outshine popsicles was Caitlin Cooper's, which just sticks in my brain a lot. Various books. Zach Lowe recommended something about like facial recognition technology. Jason Concepcion recommended the histories of Herodotus. There's a lot going on this show. So it can be whatever. It could also be TV shows and movies and whatnot. So Wes Goldberg's is something that is cool and good that you like, that you think other people would enjoy. The floor is yours.
I don't read books. I have a lot of them, so I can't recommend any of them.
Pull quote. Going to put that on a social graphic. Just under a picture of your face. I don't read books. I have a lot of them.
And I like that you mentioned some of the people, like the top people in our industry reading like facial recognition books. I was like, is that where I'm falling short?
Dog, I am reading comic books. I'm legitimately reading. Like, over on that dresser right over there is just three graphic novels. And I'm like, well, all right.
It's good enough. At least it might be a gateway to words. I don't know. Like,
we do enough words, all right? It can be something else.
I'm not even using my eyes. I'm going to go with one with my ears. The new Schoolboy Q album, Blue Lips, is
nice.
Phenomenal. If you were going to ask me to recommend a top song, I don't think I could even do it. Because I think it's his best album yet. I love Schoolboy. It's his first album in 5 years. And so I was really excited to listen to it, and it did not disappoint. Great for the gym. Great if you're going for a walk. Great if you're in the kitchen, you know, following recipe or just kind of winging it.
I will say, so I mean, we've talked in this show about my sainted boy, my beautiful boy Luger. I've you know, lost him, but when I would walk him and listen to like Dipset in my headphones very loud, and I'm like, I'm walking a pit bull through the streets of Brooklyn listening to Cameron. I've never felt more indestructible than I do right now. Of course.
Amazing.
Eminently destructible. So easy to destroy me. But that most of the idea of like Schoolboy Q in your headphones as you go out for a walk, like that does sound very, very strong. And you know, I might have to crank that up in the premium boy's honor. I love that. Excellent recommendation. Even if you can't read, you can read. You just don't read all that often. Right. I am going to
to be determined if I can read. I haven't tried it in a while.
TBD. If you do decide to read at any point, I'm going to recommend A Little Blood and Dancing by Tyler Parker. So yes. I am multiply biased here. I used to work with Tyler. Tyler was a guest on this fine program. I had Tyler on before I read his book. I had had his book, but had not read it yet. I cracked it a couple weeks after he was on the show, and I absolutely loved it. Here is my elevator pitch. It's a really punchy novel, and the central character of it, I kept envisioning him in my head as the Gary Cole, who's the guy who played Reese Bobby, Ricky Bobby's dad in Talladega Nights.
I've seen that movie.
There you go. So like a kind of well-meaning scumbum, we'll say that. And it is a story about like violence, beginning violence, about like trying to hear God in a really loud and messed up world, finding joy and beauty in unexpected places and including in other people. And what Oklahoma is like through Tyler's eyes, which seems like an extremely crazy place. It is jam-packed with jokes because Tyler is a hilarious writer. And there is, I didn't count them. I should go back. An unbelievable number of references to Hakeem Olajuwon in this crime novel. Like a staggering number. I have to imagine it's more nods to The Dream than in any other novel written before or since. It's a really high... LeBron's at 40,000 points. It's going to be a long time before somebody gets past that. It's going to be a long time before somebody puts more Hakeem Olajuwon references into a book that's not a basketball book than Tyler Parker did here. Get it wherever books are sold. Get it at your library. Just get it. Tyler is incredible. I've sped through this. It was delightful. Cannot recommend it enough. A Little Blood and Dancing, Tyler Parker.
I love it. Tyler is awesome. He single-handedly carried my enjoyment through one of the doldrum days of Las Vegas Summer League. Just sat next to him, just made jokes the whole time. And I actually, this is on my list. It's one of the things I am going to read once I get to summer break here.
I love that. It's worth the effort. Also worth the effort, every single thing that Wes Goldberg makes. You can listen to Wes on Locked On Heat. You can read him at All You Can Heat. You can hear him on the Locked On NBA podcast. Just anywhere you see or hear him, enjoy. It'll be worth your time. Wes, anything else that we can point people toward on our way out the door here?
No, you nailed it. Locked On Heat, 5 days a week. Locked On NBA with my co-host Adam Mattes. We do that every Friday, Thursday night, Friday morning. Really enjoy that. Those are the places.
It's incredible that you and Adam could find common ground after the difficulty of the Heat Nuggets series, that you're able to come back together, break bread with each other, and talk to each other each week.
Hey, man, that's life. That's we set the example of what basketball conversation should be more like.
I love that. It's a wonderful example to follow, and here we do not follow it. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Divine Intervention. Thank you so much to Wes Goldberg for taking all this time to be with us, and I think to reconnect with himself. The self-scout was pretty important for him and for me as well. Thank you so much to super producer John Gennaro for everything that he does to make this show look and sound great. If you've enjoyed what you're listening to, please 5 stars, rate, review, subscribe wherever you're listening to this. Any place that you can share it helps to grow the show, helps with discoverability. Vinny Goodwill will be back with a new episode of The Good Word with Goodwill tomorrow. And I will be back with Jake Fisher for another episode of No Cap Room on Thursday. And I think that's going to do it. Thank you so much for listening, and take care of yourself. You deserve it.